You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
That is what makes democracy great. The power in a democracy is derived from the people. It resides in the people. These individuals that we have elected don't hold those seats in perpetuity.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Why are we cutting Medicaid, which is overwhelmingly popular with both Democrats and Republicans?
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
You know what we need in the United States is more paperwork.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome back, everybody, and happy Friday afternoon. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. One of the great privileges of this job is to talk to people that do the hard and good work that serves our communities every day on this program. We've got one of those great guests this afternoon. Very, very privileged and excited to speak with Jackie Anderson. She's the executive director for Feeding Wisconsin. Thanks so much for being here, Jackie. I know that it has been a trying few weeks for everyone that cares about everybody. I guess that's the way to put it. So I really appreciate you taking some time. You've worked in nonprofits for more than 25 years. You spent two decades with the US's YMCA. I grew up going to the Y. Thank you for that. I spent a lot of afternoons and summer days at the Y. So thank you for all that work. You're also the former director of Raising Wisconsin. You led advocacy efforts focused on investments in childcare and early childhood development and education. So thank you for that work as well. And now let's talk about food security in the state of Wisconsin. The basics. What is Feeding Wisconsin and what do you all do?
Yeah, so Feeding Wisconsin is what's called the Partner State Association for Wisconsin, which basically means we provide advocacy support, advocacy and policy support to the six Feeding America food banks that are throughout the state. So that means we're the ones out fighting for policies on the federal and on the local level. They certainly have their point in advocacy, but we really are the lead, kind of the conductor, if you will, making sure that everybody knows what to say to their representatives or their legislators, and you know all the good things that comes with advocacy work.
In Wisconsin, we have a lot, tens of thousands of people who are food insecure. Help put some meat on the bones there. How many folks are we talking about? How dispersed across the state are they? Is this just a Milwaukee problem?
Yeah, no, it is absolutely not a Milwaukee problem. So if you're looking at the numbers, and the numbers that I'm rattle off are based on Feeding America's commissioned Map the Meal Gap. So they actually look at census numbers and come up with where we are as a state. And right now, there's about a 12% increase in food insecurity throughout the state, which means if we're going to actually look at like the numbers, so there's about 700,000 that are considered food insecure. That means it's about 1 in 8 adults. For kids, we're looking at about 1 in 6. So you know, that's the number of people who are food insecure. Again, it's if you don't know where your next meal is coming from. I also want to clarify that it is predominantly people who are working who are also considered food insecure. So I'm trying to break the stereotype that people who are using SNAP or what we call food share in our state are not people who are taking advantage of the system, but they're people who are working and cannot make ends meet because of inflation and a lot of other different things that are happening in our world right now.
It's pretty incredible to me that so many misconceptions about the people that find themselves in need have become so sort of like dogmatically pervasive in our political discourse. And that is simply not the case. I have had friends of mine growing up in Milwaukee that I went to school with that told me about some of their food insecurity. I have a number of friends that work in public schools, and they are going out of their own pocket to bring food into their classrooms to ensure that the kids there, and some of them hungry almost every day. Why is it that we can't get behind, you know, universal school lunches for every kid and breakfast? Like, what do you think? Yeah, I've never understood this. Like, of course we should just feed all the kids in our schools. That seems like such a no-brainer to me.
Yeah, and I think it's just, it's how our legislature wants to spend money. You know, I think we're actually making some progress in helping our legislators understand the importance of healthy school meals for all. And I think it's especially over the summer, right? I mean, we're looking at about 400,000 kids who we know have healthy meals during the school year. And then once summer hits, like, their families are scrambling. So I think it's educating our legislators and our business leaders and our community members on the importance of, if kids don't have healthy food, they can't learn. And those are our future employers of those businesses and future folks who are going to be contributing to our community. So, and that's not the only reason, of course, that we want them to be healthy and whole and feel like good about themselves. But, you know, it's an investment. And, you know, my life has been revolved around youth development for many, many years. Yes. So that's something I'm very passionate about. And you have to have healthy food if you're going to be thriving.
When we look at what the big brutal bill is going to do in Wisconsin, who is this going to impact? Address some of those, what I'm going to call pernicious stereotypes about who's food insecure. I know you did in part, but especially when we look at the devastation of the brutal bill here in Wisconsin, what does it look like? What are you most concerned about?
Yeah, so, you know, my world is focused on food security. So that's SNAP, or food share is what we call it here in Wisconsin. And I think a couple things are going to happen. Work eligibility, we know, is going to be changing. So that means people who have to prove that they're working a certain number of hours, that age is going to increase. So it's now going to go up to 64, 65-ish. And I say that because I know a lot of people who are at that age, and they're not thinking about working. They're thinking about not working at that point. So, so that is one piece. People who have school-age children, that's going to be another work eligibility requirement. So people are going to be required to work a lot longer and in different ways. That is a big change. We also know that our state is going to be impacted. And when I say that, there's something that's going to be called the cost share, which means that up to this point, SNAP has always been covered 100% by the federal government. Now, states are going to have to contribute a percentage of their state budget. And unfortunately, what's going to happen, I don't think this will happen in Wisconsin, but in other states, they're opting out of SNAP. They're opting out of it, saying, like, we can't afford $200 million to be able to contribute that. So to me, that's what keeps me up at night, is like to think about those millions of people who no longer are going to have those SNAP benefits. So in Wisconsin, though, you know, back to your question, we know that cost share is going to impact us. We're very lucky in that the cost sharing is based on something called the error rate. Wisconsin has one of the lowest error rates in all of the nations because we've got really good systems in place. So we're very grateful for that, but it's still going to be an impact that we're going to have to factor in to the state budget.
Folks, if you're just joining us, we've got Jackie Anderson, the executive director of Feeding Wisconsin, with us this half hour. I want to ask you about a headline that popped yesterday, Jackie, because it made my stomach turn. And I don't mean that as a sort of poor pun. Donald Trump is destroying 500 tons of emergency food. Given what you've done for the entirety of your working career, what was your reaction to that?
I think I'll believe it when I actually see it. Like, I think it's, we know that our government will not, in some way, shape, or form, and I'm saying this based on what we saw through COVID, our government will in some shape or form, make sure that our states have food. And I think it's how they go about that, I think, is going to be a little tricky and a little sticky. And we're already seeing that in some of the cuts that we've already seen. And I think, you know, what's down the pipeline is going to be a little tricky. But we will get what we need in some way, shape, or form. Will it be less? Yes, absolutely. But I think we will still get something.
What makes you so confident?
Because I've seen it with COVID. I mean, I think, and in Wisconsin in particular, you know, we've got elections coming up, and elections are really important. And it's not good to legislators to say your constituents are hungry. And I think there is that education, and that's what we're really, we spend a lot of our time on educating legislators around the food insecurity that is in their districts. And so I think I have to think that, right? Like, I can't, if I think negatively, I'll never get to work.
I appreciate your optimism. I may not share it. I hate to say that I don't know that I would draw the parallel from COVID to today. I think the politics have become so much more dysfunctional.
Yeah.
And we've seen elected official after elected official take votes that they know will harm their constituents, lie about those votes, and then defend them because they're simply afraid of getting primaried by the MAGA regime. And what I'm going to call an embrace, a full bear hug of cruelty. We're going to continue our discussion with Jackie, but I wanted to ask you this. Describe some of the demographic breakdown of your clients. We've got about a minute left at Feeding Wisconsin. Who are these folks? If people are listening to this show, is it someone they might know or love that is struggling with food insecurity?
Oh yeah, it's everybody. I mean, if we're looking in the rural communities, it's 85% of rural communities have, 85% of those populations are considered food insecure. If you're looking at Black and Brown families, they're even more food insecure than you know, white communities throughout the state. It is people who are working. It is people with families. It is seniors. It's everybody. I mean, it's there's no neat little perfect way to describe a person who's food insecure. It can happen to any of us at any time.
85% of rural communities are food insecure. So I'm looking at you, GOP congressman that just voted for the big brutal bill, and I'm looking at you, Robin Voss, and the GOP leaders in state government. We need to do something about this, and we need to do something about it now to be sure that we are feeding our families. One in six kids in Wisconsin food insecure. Calvin, how much time we got left here? We just have about a minute left. Jackie, is there one particular statistic that jumps out in your mind that would surprise most listeners who have tuned in this afternoon about food insecurity in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I mean, and I think it's what I started out with. There are 700,000 people in our state who are considered food insecure. And I think that that is a stat that we should not be proud of. And in Milwaukee, we know that that's even higher. But I think it's, like I said earlier, it is everybody in your community. Every single district has food insecure people within their district. So
you know someone that's struggling with it. When we come back on the other side, when I ask Jackie, what do we do about it? What are the things that we need to be calling our legislators and making sure that we know so that people do not go hungry in Wisconsin? Stay tuned. We come back with Jackie Anderson, the Executive Director of Feeding Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Hello, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, and happy Friday afternoon to each and every one of you. Thanks for spending some of it with me and us here at Civic Media. We got a great guest this half hour. Her name's Jackie Anderson. She's the executive director for Feeding Wisconsin. We've been talking about food insecurity, and we're going to get into food deserts in a moment. But I wanted to ask what I think is probably the most important question, which is, what should we do about this in the wake of the big, brutal bill? With 700,000 Wisconsinites that are food insecure, 85% of folks that live in rural communities that are food insecure, the statistic, 1 in 6 kids in Wisconsin, that's just so heartbreaking to me. Mm-hmm. What do you want people to do about it if they're listening?
Yeah. So there's a couple things. The first thing that's most important is call your legislators. We know that across our Feeding America food banks, the number of people who are using food banks has gone up 30 to 45% in the past year. So we know that people are using food banks when they've or food pantries when they've never had to use them in the past. Or maybe, you know, people are used to go only once a month. Now they're having to go 2 to 3 times because of the cost of living right now. So the first thing is call your legislators, because if this is something that doesn't sit right with you, knowing that people are who are working aren't able to make ends meet, that is one thing that you absolutely can do. The second thing you can do is volunteer at food banks and food pantries, because everyone is looking at their operational cost and, you know, how to make ends meet, knowing that there has been some cuts. So it's really thinking about how you can help, because oftentimes at a food bank, for example, they'll get a huge vat of rice that needs to be broken down to individual increments so that it can be given to pantry folks. That takes time. And then the last piece is donating resources like funds. We desperately need funding because of, you know, funders aren't contributing like they used to right now. And so that we're seeing that throughout.
Well, and the big brutal bill cuts. I mean, let's be honest about it. And, you know, I often say the thing that stands between someone and healthcare who is eligible, right? As a person stands and they're eligible, they are working or they are fully disabled, or they're caring for someone that is fully disabled and requires individualized care, whether that's Medicaid or SNAP benefits, food share benefits here in the state of Wisconsin. If the thing that prevents them from getting that benefit are ridiculously complicated paperwork systems, that is a failure, right? That is government putting up unnecessary administrative paperwork roadblocks that end up costing Wisconsinites lives. And if you think this is just a problem in Democratic congressional districts or places that it's not. I wanted to give some love because everybody that listens to the show knows I'm a complete data nerd and a wonk about this stuff. You can go to Feeding Wisconsin's website at feedingwi.org and look at their food insecurity rates page. You all break this down by U.S. House district, so congressperson district, state senate district, and state assembly district. So if you're thinking, hey, I think that's great, I'm sure everybody that gets kicked off of food share, they deserve to be kicked off, go check out the map. Then go check out Map the Meal Gap, which is more data. You will see that this is really an existential question for folks. The budget shortfall we're looking at for trying to address food insecurity is some $450 million throughout the state, which translates into an annual meal gap, according to your organization's data, of $116 million.
Your
neighbors and friends will be going hungry if we don't do something about this.
Right, exactly.
Tell people, what's a food desert and why are these problematic?
Yeah, so a food desert is mostly in rural. I shouldn't say that. It is in communities where there's not access to healthy food. So if you think about in a rural community, if let's say they have one rural grocery store that was dependent on SNAP benefits, if we're going to keep along those lines, if they're reliant on SNAP benefits to help make ends meet, and we know that SNAP is going to be cut, then that means that people are not going to be using those benefits at that rural grocery store, which means that that rural grocery store could potentially close, which means that then people will have to travel that much further to get healthy food. So that is happening throughout our state and rural communities, and also in Milwaukee too. I mean, you know, there are absolutely food deserts that we know that are there too. And so that means people either have to go to the local bodega where there's maybe not fresh fruits or vegetables, or you know, a Dollar General if you're in a rural community. So it's getting slimmer by the day.
Folks, again, that is Jackie Anderson, Executive Director of Feeding Wisconsin. Check out their website. Check out some of this incredible data that they've got available to you at feedingwi.org. You said before, Jackie, we've got just about a minute left here, that food pantry patronage usage has gone up 35% to 40%. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you this. When you look at the big, brutal bill, and you look at even our state's biennial budget, with this increase, this pain point for working folks and folks in need, at the very point when people need this assistant most, we're cutting it. Is it, in fact, cruel?
It is cruel on the federal level. I will say on the state level, we did just get a $10 million state investment to support food banks and food pantries. So there is progress and we are going in the right direction. But on the federal level,
keep it up, Wisconsin. Yeah, get on the horn, call your legislators. Right. And I'll just say thanks to Governor Evers and legislative Dems for getting that $10 million. And thanks to you, Jackie Anderson of Feeding Wisconsin. Check it out, feedingwi.org. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I have been struggling with how, frankly, ticked off I've been for the last couple of weeks related to the Epstein allegations. And I have been trying to figure out not just why I'm ticked off. I know at some basic level why I'm ticked off. I mean, this is horrifying and terrible. And the political hypocrisy and the flip-flopping is also horrible and terrible. And yesterday we talked briefly about the fact that the DOJ fired Maureen Comey, who was one of the lead lawyers on the Epstein prosecution, also happens to be Jim Comey's daughter. And this seems to be the news story every day. The lead story. And the lead story is about the politics of the situation. And the thing that's been difficult for me is that there are victims. And all of this discussion of the politics, I don't know, in my opinion, seems to not at times focus on how incredibly prevalent in our society sexual predation and exploitation and assault is. And it's been really triggering for me. And so a trigger warning here, because we're going to talk about this stuff. And it's important to talk about these things. And it's important to talk about the political hypocrisy and the political ramifications of this. And the motivations for that. But all of this is impacting women especially, but all of us. And every time we hear about it, every time I hear about it, it's really painful. I've spoken on this show before that I survived a pretty violent assault. And we're now in a moment a political moment that is part of MAGA seems incredibly anti-woman. And embracing these ideas of this hyper machismo and this embrace of women hating and women bashing and don't believe women, and that women have to appear a certain way, and that's frankly hypersexualized. And all of this, I think, is making me really angry, in part because Donald Trump himself has such a lengthy documented history of, to put it mildly, like just really derogatory opinions and beliefs and manners of discussing women and sexualizing women. Even if you discount all of the incredibly well-documented, publicly made allegations of inappropriate touching, forcible kissing, barging into dressing rooms when women are naked because he owns and runs the pageant, and just disgusting talk. And back in 2016, I mean, I remember when the Access Hollywood tape came out, and the response was kind of like, oh, that's just locker room talk. That's the undercurrent was that's acceptable. That's okay. He didn't really mean any of that. But we've got a president for the second time who didn't just say that once to Billy Bush, but has said things like that documented in live radio interviews with Howard Stern and on The View, and has said things like this, and again, has dozens of public allegations against him. And so my question, I think the thing that's making me so angry is, if people who supported Donald Trump, maybe in 2016 and maybe again in 2024, are you rethinking any of that? Are we rethinking blowing the Access Hollywood tape off of saying dozens and dozens of these women are just lying? And I'm talking about the women that have accused Donald Trump, because there's more of them on the record than there are public victims of Jeffrey Epstein on the record. And the journalist Michael Wolff interviewed Jeffrey Epstein at length back in 2017. And he specifically asked him some questions about Donald Trump and about their relationship, meaning Epstein and Donald Trump's relationship. And I haven't listened to the apparently over 100 hours of these things, but there's one particular interview between Michael Wolff and Jeffrey Epstein where what Epstein says and characterizes the relationship between him and Donald Trump was like should be extraordinarily deeply concerning. And yeah, it needs to be revisited again. And we've got some of that particular portion of Michael Wolff's interviews with Jeffrey Epstein. And again, this interview occurred in 2017. And it's kind of hard to hear because Epstein was on the phone. And so I'm going to actually read the transcript of what was said before we listen to the tape so that your mind kind of knows what to expect. So this first one is about a little bit over a minute and a half long. And it begins with Michael Wolff saying, how do you know this? I don't know what the this is, but that's not the point. Epstein's response is, I was Donald Trump's closest friend for 10 years. And then Michael Wolff says, I need the dump. Give me Donald. And Epstein says the following. Well, first things first, he had a scalp reduction. He's getting male pattern baldness like we all have. So he had his scalp reduced. It's hysterical. And then he says this. Donald's office, as you know, that he made that. He used to be on the phone there. And I was sitting there with Donald, listening to the guys from the Post talk about stuff. And Donald would say, oh, he's a great guy. I love working with him. And I'm sitting there, and it's just amazing. And he'd say, Michael, let's go to the office. Tell me what it's like to be married. And he'd say, oh, you know, do you like having sex with your wife? How often do you? And I'd say, it's great. Seriously, Michael, how often do you have sex with her? Don't you want to? We can, Michael, you and I go upstairs, or tomorrow come over. There's this girl coming in from Los Angeles, part of the Hawaiian Tropic contest. So come over. You're going to have a great time. I promise you that, Michael. You know, it's just me and you. You're going to have a great time. Be up here at 3 o'clock. We can go upstairs. What are these two guys, one a convicted criminal sex trafficking pedophile and Donald Trump hanging out for a decade as best friends? What's that about? What is Epstein talking about? Let's take a listen. This is, again, Michael Wolff interviewing Epstein. Kind of hard, but I read it to you, so you got an idea of what you're hearing. Let's take a listen.
So how do you know this?
Donald's close to straight.
So I need the dump. Just give me Donald.
Where's it? It's fun. So you probably know he had a scalp reduction. Because he had the same male pattern model that we all have. He had his scalp wound from the system. Donald's office, as you know, he made that. He used to be on the phone with that fake PR person. Yeah. I also found it funny. I was sitting there listening to the guys from the Post talk, and Donald would say, you know, he's a great guy. You know, I loved working with him. And I sit there going, this is just amazing. And he'd say, Michael, come on, let's go to the office. And he'd say, tell me, what's it like in there? He'd say, you know, do you like having sex with your wife? How often do you live? He'd say, it's great. Seriously, Michael, how often do you have sex? I mean, don't you want the truck? You and I can go upstairs or tomorrow, come over. There's this girl's coming in from Los Angeles, part of the Hawaiian Tropic so come over to your car. You're going to have a great time. I promise you, Michael, you know, it's just me and you. You're going to have a great time. Be up here at 3 o'clock. We can go upstairs.
And that conversation continued. And then later on, Epstein says this to Michael Wolff back in 2017 about Donald Trump. And this is, again, Epstein basically quoting Trump to Michael Wolff. Come on, you must have had a better F than your wife, right? He answers yes, and the wife's on the speakerphone listening. Donald would say, I think you're really hot. And I know you think you're with a guy like Michael, who's the end of the world, best guy on earth. You've broken your marriage bed, but you're wrong. You just listen to, and they'll set you up. We'll set you up. Sounds like Donald Trump and Epstein were having conversations, or Donald would, to a married woman, trying to convince her to what? Have sex with them? Take a listen.
Come on, you must have had a better wife, right? Especially yes. Tell me about it. And the wife's on the speakerphone listening to Donald and said, you know, I know you, well, I think you're really hot. And I know you think you're a guy, Michael, it's like the end of the world, the best guy on earth, you're really magical. You're wrong. Just listen to the next 20 minutes. And you can go with the new office, set you up.
So these guys, best friends for a decade. talking about bringing women in from the Hawaiian Tropic contest, talking married women into, I don't know, sleeping with them. It's different now. Those recordings came out. Donald Trump wasn't president. He is now. His DOJ is saying, just forget about this. There's no there there. I don't know about you, but it's landing differently for me. And I think we've got to talk about this again, because Jeff Epstein is dead. But Donald Trump is our president. We've got to keep talking about it. And we will, on the other side, after these brief messages. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
I've been trying to tackle what is, I think, complicated, stomach-churning, and difficult topics about why do people care so much about Jeffrey Epstein? Well, they care for a whole bunch of political reasons, and I'm going to talk about all that stuff, the politics of the thing, the hypocrisy, the flip-flopping, the QAnon of it all, the conspiracy theories about Pizzagate and the basement, and it's Democrats and Hillary Clinton. We'll talk about all of that. Specifically, we'll talk about it next week, Friday. But I have been angry and emotional and sad and triggered. I'm a survivor, and I'm triggered and upset because while Jeffrey Epstein is dead, and yes, it is undeniable, you'd be a fool to think that this guy who had princes of England and captains of industry and presidents of universities in his little black book in his Rolodex, that powerful, wealthy men, potentially politicians, potentially from both parties, it's stupid, it's foolhardy to think there aren't other people that are implicated, that potentially committed crimes with Jeffrey Epstein. There was a criminal conviction, there was a trial, there is a person sitting in prison right now who was his co-conspirator, who's ready to go on the record. So yeah, we'll talk about all the politics of it. What is a cover-up? What does it look like? But what's bothering me now is that Donald Trump is our president and he's making these calls and we're all talking just about the politics. And I know that there are hundreds of thousands of women in this country that every time it's just about the politics. Think, what about what happened to me? What about this culture of treating women like this, of excusing men that disrespect and treat women inappropriately, and yes, some rape them. And to me, all of the information, all of the grotesque Howard Stern interviews, and I've listened back to a bunch of them between Stern and Trump. He did so many of them, and they were all kind of this debased, debauched objectification of women and talks of periods and threesomes and how often you sleep with it, just debauched. And all of the allegations, I've read through them again. I've read the women's names again. This was all known. It was all out there. Does anybody have buyer's remorse? Does any of this sit differently for people now? Because it sits differently for me, including that freaking Access Hollywood tape. You can say it's locker room talk, but was it? And in case you can't remember, listen to it again and see if it sounds different this time.
I moved on her and I failed. I'll admit it.
Whoa.
I did try and f her. She was married.
That's huge news there.
No, Nancy. Yeah. No, this was marriages. And I moved on her very heavily. In fact, I took her out furniture shopping. She wanted to get some furniture. I said, I'll show you where they have some nice furniture. I took her out furniture. I moved on her like a but I couldn't get there. And she was married. And all of a sudden, I see her. She's now got the big phony and everything. She's totally changed her look. I better use some Tic Tacs just in case I start kissing her. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. You just kiss. But I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the I can do anything.
It sounds different to me. It sounded terrible and was disqualifying to me when I heard it in 2016. It's worse now. Do any of his supporters care? If you care about Jeffrey Epstein and any belief that people are sitting on information about folks that may be still in positions of leadership or prestige or power or wealth, committed these crimes with Epstein, and you think that is despicable and that we should have transparency, where is your rage? Where is your outrage? Can you have the humility to revisit your defense of these things in the past? Your dismissal of dozens of women, your dismissal of all of this as, oh, that's funny, it's locker room talk. It doesn't seem so funny to me now. What are we angry about? What are you angry about? If you believed the QAnon, if you believed the years of Donald Trump and Cash Patel and Bongino and the Manosphere, all talking about the Epstein files and the Epstein tapes and the client lists and the... Where is your outrage now? Your outrage at this president for what he did or has been alleged to have done. Or even for what he says, how he treats, and clearly what he believes about women as our rights are stripped from us and we are told, directly and indirectly, to shut up. I won't do that. I'm Maggie Dawn. Thanks for listening. Please take care of yourselves. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together in defense of women.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.